Mayfield Media Group. It's time for the fastest hour in radio, your home for NASCAR. We're Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Buzz. Now, live from the Valvoline Instant Oil Change Studio, it's Jamie Kyle and Scott Webb.
Just hour in radio. Whether you're listening to us on 101.3 The Buzz or the TuneIn app, thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your day. Here's what's coming up on today's show. We'll be breaking down the Auto Club 500. We'll hear from winner, yes, Kyle Larson. We'll also discuss the good, the bad, the ugly of the whole weekend at Auto Club Speedway. Later in the show, we'll discuss the upcoming race at Martinsville. And as always, share our power rankings and picks to win. We got all that and much, much more on today's show. Guys, man, I tell you what. We've got all these West Coast swing. And then now we're heading to the short track of Martinsville. We've got co-host Scott Webb and Jason Hildebrand here. Jason, it's actually going to be fun to get to a little short track racing.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, a different style track. Coming back to the East Coast, not these late starts that we're used to seeing on Sunday. So as far as Eastern time goes, you know, versus
right.
The
West Coast. I'm ready for some earlier starts.
I'm ready for some 1 o'clock starts, you know, guys.
Yeah, it's like my pro football on Friday or on Sunday. I'm ready for some 1 o'clock kickoffs.
I'm wondering I'm anxious to see how the garage rule works at Martinsville.
Yeah,
how many less cars you're gonna see out there rolling around, that baby?
Well, it's not hard to keep the speed limit up with the on-course track racing because you're not going particularly fast, but you got to be able to keep that thing pointed in the right direction. So it should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to that.
Absolutely. But this past weekend we raced at California, which was extremely fast, big track. Man alive, I tell you what, it started out, and I know we were texting each other on Friday night during qualifying, watching those guys actually go into turn three, bouncing around. I mean, it's almost like you were on a roller coaster, you know, trying to go through there and keep it on the track. We saw, I guess it was the 43.
Eric Almirola,
you know, basically just dumped it twice and said, forget it, I'm not going to try.
He had that thing puckered up, buddy, I'm telling you what. I mean, he bailed out twice, and then the third time, he wasn't pushing the envelope, and, it was pretty pitiful qualifying effort by him.
You know, and another big story, Scott, that we had, you know, Friday night with the qualifying is the fact that you had a ton of people trying to roll through tech, and I don't know what it is this year. It doesn't seem like, and maybe it happened last year, and we just didn't think about it as much. But when you've got names like Joey Logano that are not able to get out and qualify because of going through tech, it shows these guys are really trying to push the envelope.
He even alluded to that. You know, when he was trying to get in the car, about to get in the car, he goes, look, everybody out here is trying to push the envelope on every little thing we can do.
Well, you speak of Logano, that, you know, his weekend was disastrous because he only finished top five. So,
yeah, I mean, he did
finish without qualifying.
Right. Without qualifying. So, yeah, I can see where him not qualifying would be a huge obstacle. You know, I think you nailed it on the head. It's a matter of they're pushing the limits. They're trying to squeeze as much out of these cars as they can, so they're struggling. We saw this with Truex down in Daytona. They struggled the whole entire time they were in Daytona, but their template was off. So there's so much science involved in what's going on and getting these cars prepared that they're going to push the envelopes right up to the edge. Sometimes they'll push it a little too far. NASCAR will say, hey, we're going to have to bring that back in a little bit. And it'll take a little time, but most of these cars are finding a way. Johnson was the other one that didn't take a qualifying run, but he wrecked. They had to go to a backup car, and they just didn't have time to get that car ready, so they just elected not to do it.
Going to a backup car is better, you know, I guess a better excuse than having to go to backup tires. Like the 88 did.
Oh, yeah. That was
I mean, but we see those things. Yeah. Those things happen. It happened to Denny Hamlin the week before in Phoenix where he cut a tire during his first qualifying run, so he couldn't take a second qualifying run in the second round, so he just ended up being last in that round. So, you know, and then if you change tires, the NASCAR rule is, then you got to go to the back of the field because everybody's starting on the tires they qualified on. So if you have something like those things are going to happen probably to everybody once every couple of years. Now, if it's a weekly thing or it happens two, three times, You know, then you start to question what it is you're trying to do. And did you too low of air pressure in those tires, getting them to be easily cut? Then you have to start to look at things. But you're going to run over stuff. That's just the nature of the sport.
Well, and with the track, with the surface that California has, I mean, the thing was open, I think I want to say 1997 or whatever, and hasn't been paved since. So very rough track, very hard on the tires. But interesting kind of watching the racing. I mean, you had 3, 4, 5 wide, Jason, going into the corner. You know, clean air, I know we hate using that, did play a little role in, you know, when somebody got out front. But overall, I know before the show you said it was a little boring this year with the way it's gone, but I thought the 3, 4, 5 wide racing in the corners seemed to be pretty entertaining.
I thought it was good on restarts. Well, you know,
restarts were awesome.
Which limited restarts you had. But, you know, when you get into those long green flag runs, I mean, there's really – not a whole lot of passing out there, not a whole lot of actual on-track racing at that point in time.
So let me ask this question. Here, Jamie, I'm going to take over the show for just a minute, if you don't mind. Is this track dependent, or is this more car setup and that type of stuff?
I think it's track. I think you're going to see a lot more action out there this week at Martinsville. I think you're going to see a lot more action at Bristol, you know, than what we were seeing out here. You're seeing these tracks out there in California. It's known for those long green flag runs. You look at Vegas, I mean, same type of thing.
Well, mile and a half, so they're devil. I'm convinced of it. You can't convince me otherwise. Mile and a half tracks,
the devil.
They're the devil.
But if you keep trying so many different things with the cars and everything else like they've done over the past 3 or 4 years, and you still get the same result, maybe with a little change, you know, one way or the other, you guys said track dependent. Wouldn't you think that would be car dependent? I mean, the track's not going to change, so if we do something with the cars that might be a big swing, you know, then that might make a big difference. We talk about clean air making a difference all the time. How do you fix that? With all the intelligent people they have, or lack thereof, at NASCAR, you would think somebody would be able to fix that.
I don't know. You saw a couple of years ago, it might have been even last year, they were talking about car setup changes when they go to different tracks. You know, especially Kentucky was, I think, the first one.
Yeah, low downforce package and do some things like that. It's, you know, the science of these, you know, they've done a lot to try to kind of hamper these cars aerodynamically. They've lowered the spoiler, done some things, so they don't just get stuck to the racetrack and be able to maneuver and do everything they want to do. They want to try to make it hard and challenging for the difficult. I think tires plays a big role in that, too, and the people that are able to, you know, maintain or not lose their tires as quickly as some of the others are able to make some things happen on the racetrack. But we see, you know, we see the importance. If you have a fast race car and you're able to get air on the front of that car and keep it planted tight to the track, you're just going to be faster than everybody else. And I don't know if there's a way to do that the way these cars are currently designed.
Absolutely. And that's what's going to be the challenge going forward, I think, for NASCAR, is to make these bigger tracks, mile and a half, other than Daytona and Talladega, a little more interesting. And I think that's why when you said, you know, Martinsville and Bristol and stuff like that, are those kind of tracks, that those are interesting because air doesn't play that big of a role there in comparison to some of these bigger tracks. It's more driver and crew.
And you don't see those big leads out there. Yeah. I mean, drivers get out there in that clean air and just get a big lead, and then they're uncatchable unless you have some kind of restart.
And that is something that's changed because if you think about it, you always saw Richard Petty and all these, you know, David Pearson guys on these short tracks that were winning by 4 laps or 5 laps, right? So those leads did take place at that point in time, and it seemed to have the short tracks fixed, but it's that midsize.
When you're talking about those cookie-cutter tracks, and we talked about the mile and a half and whatnot, and when was the last time you saw somebody actually get ran down?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to do unless you're on different strategy with tires. I mean, we saw the restarts there towards the end. I think the next to last restart where Larson and then decided to pit. They came out second or third or whatever behind a very competitive Martin Truex. But once he got that car wound up, the tires were just made such a difference that nobody, you know, tires play a factor in that as much as anything else.
All right, so let's get to Harry Gant, right, or Kyle Larson. But before, you know, we listened to him and what he said in Victory Lane, it really is, and we've talked about this over the last couple of weeks, these young guys now, the new NASCAR, if you want to call it, and if I'm the first one to say that, then we need to hashtag that that saying, but the new
is that
NASCAR,
T-shirt worthy? Is Travis Godfrey listening? Is that T-shirt worthy? New NASCAR?
Free T-shirt
baby NASCAR.
Worthy. That could be what it is.
Baby NASCAR.
But is that, I mean, I am completely impressed with the fact that we've seen, you could say Daytona could be, you know, one of those things where, yeah, they're running up front. But you've got Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney, not to mention Kyle Larson, who's a little older. These guys are running consistently you know, top 10 every week at some of these tracks that could be kind of difficult. Jason, is this now, you know, what we're seeing, what we've been waiting on for a while as the older drivers start to age and mature and get out, this new crop coming in?
It definitely is. You're looking at the future of the sport, and the future of the sport, you know, is relying on these guys in there right now. Those guys are going to be veterans here soon. Yeah. You know, you think about it. I mean, that once they get a few years under their belt in the series, along with, you know, the guys that are still young, like a Logano and whatnot.
I mean, those guys are 25, 26 years old. Those guys are the experienced guys. Those guys aren't 20 years ago. Those guys would be new. I think NASCAR is in great shape.
Yeah.
I think these guys are talented, and now we're starting to see. I mean, each week we're starting these are the best drivers in the world, and they're starting to prove not only are they as good as those guys, but they've got as much talent or more, and they can take it to the front, and we're seeing it, especially from Larson and Chase Elliott on a week-to-week basis.
And guys, don't sleep on Daniel Suarez. I know he's got a few races under his belt now in the series as a full-time driver, but the guy's in good equipment. We know what kind of equipment that Carl Edwards had out there. So don't sleep on him. I mean, he had come up with a top-10 finish last week.
Right, and watch his career. Watch what's happened this year as he gets more comfortable. We saw the same thing happen last year where Chase Elliott had speed. Now it's a matter of finishing races. Suarez will figure it out, and he's going to put himself in a position to win some races this year too. Now, whether or not he wins it, that's a whole other issue, but he's a very talented driver, and I think he's going to be a big part of this new NASCAR movement.
Right, and at this point, I don't know if you expect him to win, but a top 10, he finished 7th at California.
The car he's in is capable of winning.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no doubt about that.
All right, let's talk about Harry Gant or Kyle Larson. The guy I would love to have, and I'm sure if you ask any other driver in the garage if they would take his up-to-this-point season average on finish, I think everybody would say, oh, heck yeah. But this guy has been in pretty much every race or had a shot in every race. Finally closes it out at his home track. What do you think about this? Let me ask you this first, or say this, what I heard this week. I heard that Jamie McMurray, Chip Ganassi Racing, has gotten a lot better because of the Stuart Haas Racing exit from Chevrolet. And so Hendrick has been giving a lot more stuff to them, and this is part of their 3 or 4 year plan that they're working on now with the two drivers that they have. We've seen increased productivity from Jamie McMurray and from Kyle Larson. I wonder if that could be a part of it, or if these guys are just that good.
Well, Hendrick better quit doing that because, I mean, he needs to keep that stuff because those guys are outperforming his drivers.
I think right now it's only engine stuff that they're sharing. Chassis and all that other stuff that is Ganassi's doing all that stuff in-house. I think we're seeing what happened last year at the end of last year with McMurray and with Kyle Larson. We're starting to see that kind of move. They've taken the next step. You could see them getting competitive. Larson wins last year at Michigan. We could see that they were coming. And I think they've taken the next step in the offseason into putting themselves. Even McMurray is running great week in and week out. Now, he's not having quite the finish, but I don't think he's quite the talent. People would say that he's quite the talent that Kyle Larson is. And you're starting to see these guys run consistently top 10 week in and week out. Is there some sort of connection with being a little more involved in Hendrick? Maybe, but I think it's just them starting to get their footing and a very talented driver starting to realize how actually good he is.
You know, one of the things that I saw out of Jimmy Murray, and you guys probably may agree with me or not, but over his career, you've seen a guy out there that's a very good driver that has the potential to go out there and win a race, potentially be in a top 5 finish, but he's never done it on a consistent basis, so he doesn't feel like a threat to win the race. I mean, he's a long shot every week, but he is not out of the question for him to finish with the top 10 or top 5.
Well, you know, I heard a good story on him that were, you know, was kind of talking about his driving style. He's one of those guys that's not going to go out and blow you away, you know, every week, week in, week out, but he's going to keep the fenders on the car. He's going to bring the car home, you know, and finish. Had a good run this week and finished 6th. So, you know, I think he's kind of the older veteran in the group in Kyle Larson, but I think what's happening is there's a better relationship there between those two. And then I think some of the Hendrick drivers are sharing some information too. Definitely not Dale Earnhardt because he needs some help. But that's kind of like that. So
Earnhardt had a decent run.
Yeah, whatever.
But see, I mean, it's expectation level. Yeah. Whereas from an expectation standpoint, I mean, look at Jimmy Johnson. They struggled at a track that he is has been completely dominant at. So,
but what should the expectation level be for Dale Earnhardt?
And that may be, it may be totally different than it was 18 months ago.
If we get some time, I want to discuss what we were talking about last
night. Yeah, I wish you guys would, because you're blowing up my phone last night.
So let's hear from Kyle Larson and his win at California.
Yeah, it was definitely a great run for us. We were able to lead a lot of laps, win that first stage, and then I made a mistake on pit road and slid through, well, not through my box, but through my sign, and was too close to the wall on the left side, and the jack couldn't get up as fast, so our stop was really slow on that one. I lost some spots and was able to get right to second, though, on the restart, and just kind of abused my tires that run and fell back to third or fourth. And then got back to second for the end of that second stage, and had a good restart there to start the final stage, and got out to the lead and kind of, you know, try to run my own pace and take care of my tires, and actually pulled away from Truex quite a bit, and then he had gained a lot on us on that green flag stop. I probably came to pit road a little slow just to be safe, because I had the stop before, I had came in really hot and almost sped. So he closed it on us there, and then was really good when we left for that run, and I had to battle him, and he got by me, and I was able to, you know, get back by him, and then kind of pull away a little bit, and then that's when all the cautions started coming out, and we had some decent restarts there at the end, but still had more cautions and had to actually come back down pit road, put four new tires on, and get some more good restarts. So the pit calls were great. The pit crew did an amazing job.
You definitely can't say he's Mr. Excitement when he's doing interviews, because I think we just got a whole race recap there in about a minute and
I was searching for stuff for him to say there. So
that's California. That's out of club speed.
Yeah, he was just rambling.
That's how good he was.
Exactly. All right, we need to go to break. When we come back, we'll discuss a couple more drivers like Brad Keselowski and Clint Bowyer who had good runs, and then we'll give you some news and notes in the world of NASCAR. We'll be right back right after this.
We'll be back faster than a hot lap at Daytona. Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Buzz.
What a start for Kyle Larson. He jumps out to lead. One car going around, and it is Brad Keselowski. Off turn number four, we see the caution flag for the first time this afternoon.
Kevin Harvick, his car is over a second off the pace right now.
The green checkered flag is out. Kyle Larson wins stage one.
Here comes Chase Elliott. This time he's got a fender alongside. They cross the stripe side by side.
Martin Truex Jr., he'll cross the line winning stage number two.
Well, we've got Jimmy Johnson sitting perpendicular in the pit box.
Kyle Larson, they are absolutely side by side. Hamlin slips up the 14-degree banking. That gives Kyle Larson the lead. Ricky Stenhouse is in a spin. He walks it down. That was just good, hard racing.
Truex just shoving Larson back to the top five. And win number two in his career will come in his home state. Kyle Larson across the line. He will score the victory in the Auto Club 400.
We're back and talking more NASCAR. Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Buzz.
Welcome back to Racing Talk Radio 101.3 The Buzz. I'm your host, Jamie Kyle. Scott Webb, Jason Hildebrand. Just finished discussing a little bit of California. Scott's tearing it up today, again on the music. I mean, this is every week.
Not every week. Well, most weeks.
Maybe what you're doing for a living now can change to radio DJ.
Radio DJ. So he's my official radio voice.
Exactly. That would be great. All right, let's talk about a couple of other drivers before we wrap up California. I was really impressed, and normally in a you know, very aerodynamic track that you've got to have, you know, clean cars and everything else in order to go fast. You would think that if you wrecked and you messed your car up and it looked like a car after Martinsville, that you wouldn't be able to finish well. But, guys, kudos to Brad Keselowski and their team. I mean, to be able to paste or put that thing together, not only with the time that they had in the 5 minutes, but, Jason, also, you know, with the sensitivity to the aerodynamics and to be able to come out and run second.
I'll tell you, you know, Brad, that whole team is phenomenal, in my opinion. I mean, what can you say about them week in and week out?
Like them or not like them, they're great. That car finds a way to get to the front every single week, it's whether good, he wins.
And it's good off the trailer. That's the key.
Qualify well. They always run well in the race.
I mean, if you don't take care of equipment, you still get it back out there and finish.
Right. And you find a way to put yourself. I mean, they're just one of the top five teams in the sport.
And the one thing you got to think about is they didn't have their crew chief. I mean, he was suspended.
He's suspended for three, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you had, and they held up those penalties. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they – they had, you know, basically a sub crew chief, which you could probably say three or four guys on their team at any given point could run that, you know, race or whatever.
Did they ban cell phone use? I mean,
or internet connectivity?
Yeah, or internet connectivity. I'm sure that he had his hand all over that race car.
Exactly.
If not physically all over his race car, he was. He had his share of input going in.
And I'm not sure if that's something we could look back on this finish here and how they got that together and see how that makes a difference in the way he, you know, places in the playoffs, or if you look back at the end of the year and he's the champion and you can take it back to this race where they could have easily given up and parked it, but kept it going. One driver that I'm really excited to talk about, and I know he's really excited, and I really want to hear from him here in a second, and we will, but Clint Bowyer. You know, when we were talking about the young guys earlier, one of the things I put in our show notes, right, because we do show notes.
We do show notes.
Yes.
This
is
year.
That, is
most
that
of the time.
Clint Bowyer is acting like, you know, one of the young rookies, because this is, you know, his first year back and in a good car after a miserable year last year. But, guys, this is something he's been, you know, up at the front the first half of the year and really running well. I expect to see this to continue to go on.
Yeah, you look at it, this is his first year with Stuart Haas coming over from H. Scott Motorsports, and he's driving well. You know, he's had some unfortunate incidents the first couple of races of the year. But, you know, you saw him out there Sunday with a top three finish. And I mean, what can you say? And that's got to, I guess, improve your psyche, you know, if that's the right words, right phrase to use. But it looks like he's having fun out there.
Yeah, it almost like he enjoys coming to the racetrack now, where last year he didn't.
Well, listen, if you were on a bottom feeder team and all of a sudden you got promoted and the phone call came in and you got drafted or you got traded.
It's like
traded.
Getting traded from the Browns to the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, you got traded. Hey, would you be a little happier or a little more excited to come to work every day? I think so. When Regions Bank drafted you and made the deal, you were a little happy to come to work, weren't you?
I was happy. Let's hear how happy that Clint Bowyer was after the race.
I remember, I think I've been coming here 12, 13 years now, and it wasn't always this way. You know, I remember single file around here, couldn't really pass, right, ring around the bottom, and now, I mean, all hell breaks loose on them restarts. You're, you know, trying to protect the bottom. They're calling you outside. You don't know if you're 3 wide, 4 wide, 12 wide. And it's all because of a really wide, cool racetrack, fast racetrack, and a lot of grooves. You know, 5 different grooves to race on all day long. It was just a lot of fun to be out there. Very challenging track, trying to balance those front tires, the rear tires, and, you know, and not push them off. You know, you can overdrive your car, and I did one run, and thing fell away. And, you know, you learn from your mistakes and go on. But just to have the organization behind me, everybody at Stuart Haas Racing, my teammates, you know, to have these teammates like this is just at this point.
You know, one thing that you want to look at there is the fact that he scored points in all three of the stages. And that's something we hadn't had to look at over the years or whatever that we've been doing this. But now with the stage racing, it's important. You know, you look at him, Martin Truex, Joey Logano, Jamie McMurray, all scored points in each one of the stages. So I think going forward in this new, you know, the way it's done with the stages and stuff like that, it's important to make sure that you get something, you know, every stage.
And look, the issue's never been Bowyer's inability to drive. I mean, when he was in, the 15 car, I mean, he drove well in the 5-hour energy car. Just last year was an off year for him. But, I mean, you're exactly right, you know, picking up those points. It's interesting because, you know, you see Harvick out there without a win, and as of a couple of weeks ago, he was leading in the points based on his dominance in those segments.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, anytime you get the opportunity to get in new stuff, there's always an excitement when you – I don't change jobs, but change organizations, and there's that the excitement level of getting to know everybody and starting to put some stuff together. They'll build some even better chemistry as they move forward. And he's always been a fun-loving guy. So I think that –
Great Twitter follow.
Yeah, he's a great follow on Twitter. So I think that'll rub off on his team as well. And this team can do some serious things. We know their speed in that organization. We know Kevin Harvick and what he can do. Kurt Busch has had – obviously won the Daytona 500 this year. But his arc seems to be moving up. It seems to be week in and week out they're getting more and more competitive. And we're starting to remember how good of a driver – Clint Bowyer is.
Absolutely. And it is fun to watch him because, like you said, his Twitter, you know, is great to follow on Twitter, but he's also a great interview at right after the race really fun and seems like one of those guys you'd want to hang out with and people can relate to.
Late night Twitter. If you're just out there browsing around, late night Twitter. Just check it out.
He has a different time schedule.
About Monday or Tuesday night, so you know it's good.
All right, let's put the wraps on California and go to some newsworthy notes in the world of NASCAR. One that came out, and I think we kind of knew this after last year, is that Bristol's going to treat the racetrack again. Jason, we were there last year. Could you tell a big difference in when they treated it and when they didn't?
Just as a casual fan watching, no, not in my opinion. I mean, because I think the drivers were able to run anywhere they wanted to begin with. But, Kevin Harvick was talking about how he really liked it because it allowed him to choose a bottom top line and really not have any kind of problems. Of course, he's saying that because he won the race.
Right.
Those guys, they know it better than we do, so they could tell a big difference.
Yeah, I think that, they were happy with, it became a kind of one groove track there for a while. Yeah. If you weren't able to run around the top, you were going to struggle. And we've seen that that vary, because there's been times where you had to run around the bottom and you couldn't make hayway on the top. But if they can get that back into some two-lane racing, and we started to see more and more of that last year, if that trend continues and we bring back the old Bristol, and I'm using air quotes on radio again, but some good two-by-two, side-by-side racing
bunched up
would be terrific. And you add the restart component, you're going to get – there's always cautions there, but you're going to have some great action heading into those stages because points are going to be on the line. I think it's going to make for a better race.
It almost looks like that they would take that and go further up than what they did. I mean, when we were there last year, you had that one groove on the bottom. Mm-hmm. If that middle groove is what's missing, the outside groove is where everybody kind of, migrates to later on in the race. If you had that on up and opened up that middle groove as well to where you could get some grip, you would think that racing would come back.
You would think.
Yeah. I mean,
let's get him to
no
do
argument
that.
For me.
When Jerry calls, let's make sure that we tell.
Yeah,
him.
Make sure that we're all on that. We want to make sure we get a middle groove.
Middle exactly.
Groove. Middle groove. Let me write that down in our show notes.
Please do. We'll get that done. All right. Speaking of another surface kind of conversation, is Atlanta decides not to repave. This is huge. I mean, I think there was a lot of people that were complaining about it driver-wise, and then there were a lot of people that were really happy about it. It shows, I think, now that NASCAR is really listening to the drivers and what their opinions are of these tracks.
Or is it overreaction to a few guys? I don't know. I don't have it. I don't know what the right answer is. I know that a lot of the drivers like to see the tires give up, and they're concerned about racing on a new surface. But I don't know that it is going to make it make the racing any better? The thing that makes it Atlanta, they run fast, but the tires give up so fast that your management of the tires is really the biggest thing out there. Does that change, or does the racing get better or worse by not repaving it or repaving it? I don't have the answer. I can't look in my crystal ball and give you the correct answer. I just know that the racing needs to improve there from start to finish. It seems like they had some good moments, especially with the stages. And we had a surprise winner there, but you have to remember, we've had a dominant car there the last couple times they've been there, a car that's been able to run out front and stay out front. And that makes for having to get out the Scott Webb sleep factor poll and make a prediction about where Atlanta's going to go. But, Atlanta's high on that list on sleep factor right now. Martinsville this weekend won't be.
Exactly. And you almost wonder, too, with that, you only have two tracks that haven't been repaved now, and that's California and Atlanta. And we've seen, both of those races here this year. And so it's almost like if you're going to do it, and let's see if the racing's a little better, handling would be better.
Yeah, but the problem is that's, I mean,
I could sneeze that's a, that's a, one of them.
That's like marriage, Jamie. That's right. A commitment. When you commit to putting that kind of money into that track,
that's good.
A commitment. You got to make sure it's the right one.
Absolutely. All right, last piece of news. Harvick and Keselowski, as we talked about with Paul Wolf earlier, and Keselowski, penalties were upheld, so their crew chiefs will be suspended for 3 weeks. I think they had to pay some form of money, which is probably a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, they had to fine.
$65,000.
Yeah, I saw today that Harvick's crew, they appealed, so his crew chief was actually at the race. Roddy Childress was actually at the race last week, so he'll sit the next race or the next couple races, and his penalty will start at Martinsville. Wolf already sat down last week, so he's got two more weeks.
He knew he was toast.
They yeah, they didn't know they do about that.
No chance.
Yeah, weight and height and everything was off on that car. You just start, you know, hey, where are we going on vacation, honey? Can I get a couple weeks off?
I've got 3 weeks, but I'll be on the computer on Sunday, so we'll go that route. All right, when we come back, we'll break down the Monster Energy Series point standings as well as discuss Martinsville, hear from a couple of drivers and what they have to say about Martinsville. Always interesting to go to these short tracks and will be a lot of fun. We'll be right back right after this.
We'll be back before Danica Patrick changes sponsors again. Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Bus. We're back with more NASCAR talk. Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Bus.
Welcome back live from the Valvoline Instant Oil Change Studios. This is Racing Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jamie Kyle, along with co-host Scott Webb, Jason Hildebrand. Thank you for joining us today. All right, guys, we got to get into this. It's the Monster Energy Series point standings. And you know who that's brought to you by. That's one, the only, Stephanie Painter. I want to say the best realtor in town. She's with Crylike. I've seen this girl work. She really tears it up when trying to find somebody a house. I know she's still looking for properties on Mouse Creek Road. So anybody on Mouse Creek Road that would like to sell your house, now is the time. Give her a call, 473-9545, or you can call her sale at 650-9429. She will get it sold from you for you. She's got three buyers right now waiting to buy a house on Mouse Creek Road.
Waiting.
Make sure you call. Scott, take it away.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate that as I transition here to the Master. What was that? I don't know what it
the
is.
Masters are coming up.
Yeah, the Masters is coming up. Speaking I've got that on the factor. Brain. Yeah, they'll be a tradition unlike any other. And we have the full NASCAR Monster Energy Series point standings here as I finally got the website to pull up for me. Kyle Larson is your leader. He has a 29-point lead over Chase Elliott. Another good, solid run for Chase Elliott. Martin Truex Jr. probably had the second-best car this weekend. Just made a poor one of those decisions on pit when the pit or not pit.
He didn't
have tires there at the end. It ended up costing Brad Keselowski his fourth. Joey Logano fifth. Jamie McMurray, there's that name, guys. Jamie McMurray sixth. Brian Blaney seventh. He was trying to wreck everybody, I think. He does that on a weekly basis. So he's slowly climbing up my favorite list. Clint Bowyer's eighth, Kevin Harvick ninth, and rounding out your top 10, Jamie Kyle's favorite.
That'd be Kyle Busch. Rowdy.
And that is your Monster Energy Series point standings as of March 29th.
And they're brought to you by Stephanie Painter with Crylike. Make sure you give her a call, especially if you have a house for sale on Mouse Creek Road. She's got three buyers ready to buy now. Call her 473-9545 or 650-9429. All right, let's take our attention to the
Let's move away from that because I totally butchered that segment.
I've butchered many since we've started. Let's take it to the paperclip in Martinsville. You know, a lot of people like these tracks. Jason, I know your favorite driver, Dale Earnhardt Jr., really loves getting to the short tracks. I don't know why. I could come up with a couple of reasons, but, you know, that probably wouldn't be so good. But why do drivers like racing at Martinsville?
I think the drivers, any kind of short pass, short tracks out there, I think the drivers, you think back to throwback, I think they like passing cars. That's what you hear in every race. You even heard, I want to say it was Larson there talking about, or was it Bowyer were talking about, passing cars. That's the name of the game. If you're out there on short tracks, you have those – the ability to do that because everybody's bunched up and you don't get that big 4 or 5 second lead out there on the track like that. It's fun to watch. I think it's really, really good when they're bunched up and tight like that.
And there's a lot of strategy that goes in it.
There's a lot of strategy, a lot of, action. There's a lot of action throughout the track, whether you're watching the front of the field or watching your favorite driver, wherever he is in the field or she is in the field. It gives you the opportunity to watch a lot of action. There's a lot of stuff going on. Generally there's plenty of cautions. There's just, there's all sorts of strategy. It's just a fun race. I think these guys grew up racing racetracks like this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you didn't grow up unless your name is Chase Elliott or some of these other, being able to run on big super speedways and things like that. So I think that there is something about being back kind of a grassroots feel for these drivers where they appreciate the ability to go back and run some races and do some things. I'm really excited about night racing coming up there in the not too distant future as they're working on getting the lights all installed and all that. So I think this is one of my favorite tracks of the year. It's not about speed. It's about having good setup, putting yourself in the right position, making the right calls at the right time, and being able to run around the bottom.
You brought up a great point, and I didn't think about it before I answered the question my way. But you think about how in these races, like a Martinsville or a Bristol, how many times, and you said, you know, competition throughout the field. How many times you see these battles for 15th being shown on there? You don't right. show battle for 15th at Vegas or California, but there's a lot of action there, a lot of back and forth jostling for position all through the field in these kind of races.
And it's a lot of drivers' favorite tracks. In fact, they asked Dale Earnhardt Jr. why it was his favorite track.
I love short track racing, and we don't get to do a lot of it, so that makes you love it more. And that's the less is more kind of mentality, I think, works. And for me there, being able to come to these tracks and only knowing you're only going to get a run here a few times, run a couple short tracks throughout the season a few times, it makes you really appreciate it and work hard. And it makes you, really try to take care of the car, to run all the laps and get everything out of it you can, just because it's so much fun to begin with.
And it's also fun to watch, and that's the thing. So it's fun for the drivers. It's fun to watch. You know, one person that I'm – and we talked about him earlier – that I'm interested to see go out that's run at a couple of – a run at Martinsville with a truck and with some Xfinity cars is Daniel Suarez. And, guys, if I had to put money on something like that, I would almost think that he would be the first car out, either by getting hit in the back or hitting somebody in the back and getting trouble being in there. But they ask him, you know, what it was going to be like racing there for the first time.
Well, I think the cup car is going to be way, way different than the truck. Like you just mentioned, I have ridden the truck there a couple times, and it's been a lot of fun, but definitely it's still long things that I have to get better at. It's one of those racetracks that I feel like I need to be better at, and hopefully I can do my homework right and ask my teammates, you know, for some advice, and just trying to be competitive. It's one of the racers that track position is super important. So hopefully we can have good track position and I learn as much as I can.
You know, one thing I wish I could do is be able to roll my R's like that guy can.
No,
I mean,
kidding.
He is that's fantastic.
That's fabulous.
So it is definitely going to be a big race.
I would say we're remarkably fabulous, but I can't even
you
say
just
fabulous.
Messed that up in regular English.
Yeah,
so.
I butcher the English language on a daily basis.
And you're a teacher. So
thank you. Hook on Phonics by Scott Webb.
Exactly. So what do you think some of the things are going to be strategy-wise here, especially, and this is going to be the first short track we come to, and I know you guys hate when I ask this question because it's like I'm putting you, with a headset on in the pit box, but we've got the first short track that we're coming to that is going to be the stage race. So, you know, do you think the stages are going to play that big of a role? Do you think strategy will change since, you know, than what it normally is there? Or what do you think will be the difference?
I don't know. So many cautions at short tracks, you just don't know kind of what the windows for those cautions are with getting tires and getting fuel at the time is. I think it's just going to come down to tires. I want to see how a late caution might come out and see what people do out there. It just depends on how late it comes in, because you don't have a whole lot of time to make up to get that track position.
Well, what we've seen is as we get closer to the ends of these stages, it gets real racy.
It does.
It gets real. If we could bottle up the last 10 laps at the end of a stage and play that all race long, that's what people would want to see in the sport. Obviously, that kind of intensity, you know, you'd be wrecking people left and right. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in a track like this where you can move people and be physical with people and do those types of things that you can't do on a super speedway. You may be able to get behind them or take the air off their quarter panel or something along those lines. But if I need to move Jason Hildebrand and he's in front of me, I can move him if I do it right. And it may wreck him. There could be all sorts of things. So it's going to be interesting to see how those last few laps as we get close to the end of stages kind of works themselves out.
Man, you're talking about moving people. Man, I hope to see Logano and Busch –
together. Don't you think this is where it's gonna we're gonna see something? I don't know. It's gonna be. It's obviously not gonna be Matt Kenseth running Joey Logano into the wall like we saw a couple years ago. But this is the track. If you're gonna, if there's some stuff gonna happen, this would be the great chance.
Is it time not too soon for that though? I mean, it's still kind of there, right? Where everybody's kind of paying attention to it. If you wait till later,
Kyle said he's got it coming.
Yeah,
he's got it coming.
Could definitely
and everything
happen.
Is great.
For those of you in the office pool out there, we need to find a sponsor for this. But the office pool for drivers, we have the top 10 driver ratings for Martinsville from our crack research staff at Racing Talk Radio.
Do you notice that every week it seems like Jimmy Johnson's got the top driver ranking?
Yeah.
Because he's won 57 races in the past since 08. Okay.
So I would definitely pick the 48 if you were going to do that. And then the 11 of Denny Hamlin. And then somebody may have picked Dale Earnhardt Jr. It doesn't really seem like he should be third, but he did bring home a clock a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And
it's been a pretty good track for him.
It has been.
And maybe it's just because it's his favorite. Kyle Busch, my guy, is fourth. So if you're looking for a pick there, that would be somebody to get. Yeah, I know. I had some peanut butter M&Ms before I came. All right. Well, we need to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about our power rankings and also pick a winner. We'll be back right after this.
We'll be back faster than a Jimmy Johnson pit stop. Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Buzz. This is the fastest hour in NASCAR. Buckle up and hang on. Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Buzz.
Welcome back, and thank you for making us a part of your day. This is Racing Talk Radio on 101.3 The Buzz. I'm your host, Jamie Kyle, co-host Scott Webb, Jason Hildebrand. I'm telling you what, I just gave you a pay raise, Scott, and you didn't even know it.
You
went from zero to 0.000.
You 01. Are the man.
Yeah, so that's probably more raises than the county's going
up. Our man Arnold Tarpley listening today.
Yeah.
Says no aero push, and it's all about driving in the corner and passing someone.
And as old school as he is, being a NASCAR historian, he likes and remembers those old short tracks. So, of course, he's going to be excited this weekend. I guarantee you he's one that doesn't take a nap on Sunday afternoon when they're racing at Martinsville.
No, it's one of my favorite races of the year. It's not the fastest, but there's a lot of action. There's a lot of strategy involved. You don't get two or three cars that just checks out on the field. You know, it stays pretty competitive. It's, you know, things can happen. The field gets bunched up. You know, it's just as much about your ability to pass lap cars and keep yourself in the right position and not make mistakes and not pick the wrong lane. And you know, you got to watch the curb they got around the corners. I mean, there's just a lot of it's a racetrack that I kick myself every year because I have a sister-in-law that lives in Martinsville. I mean, I got a free place to stay. So that's going to happen at some point in the near future. This boy is going to be in Martinsville to watch a race.
And even getting on pit road is sometimes can be an adventure up there.
Yeah, because it's so, I mean, they're so, you know, it's so tight to get in and off. It's just, it's a lot of fun. I think is, to me, the biggest difference in the sport 20, 25 years ago to compared to now is we don't have enough tracks like this. We're not running some of the more traditional, shorter tracks with a little more character. And listen, I understand that the big fancy speedways, they have all the concourses and the great suites and all that sort of stuff where you can get the terrific fan experience. But the sport misses tracks, and there's not enough – there's misses tracks like this, and there's not enough of them on the schedule.
Sport grew too fast.
It did grow too fast, and we talk, and everybody talks about this. You know, they talk about mile and a halfs. What's the nickname for mile and a halfs? Cookie cutters.
Right.
I mean, they're all similar. They may all be a little different, but essentially it's the same type. You have a mile and a half car package for your cars, and you take that basic package to these tracks that are getting one, maybe even two races a year, and it's all the same kind of deal, and it gets to be the same kind of racing. I think we like to see tracks like this because of the intrigue and the bumping and beating. We'd like to see a little more of that in our sport. We'd like to see some good half-mile racing like you get at Bristol, and you get this one. You know, this is the shortest track on the circuit, and you get those long straightaways and real tight turns. It makes for some intriguing racing, and it's fun to watch. It's a fun weekend. It's one of the traditional tracks, and I think that's why the drivers are so excited.
One last thing on that, too. You mentioned pit road and getting in and out, but also we've got the five-minute clock because you do have a lot of beating and banging. Listen, if you're in there for 2 or 3 minutes, you're a lap down, if not two, under caution.
Yeah.
You're way down.
So that's also a big thing is you wonder if you see a bunch of people trying to – you know, I'm sure they've got plans as far as maybe if we don't, you know, if we can't save the front, you know, quarter panel, let's just rip it off and roll. But and you may see that because we've seen some you know, late model looking cars there in the past. So, all right, let's get to our power rankings. So I think we all, this is by unanimous decision that we've all kind of went with the same as our first driver, but Kyle Larson, and it's hard to argue with that with the average finishing position that he's had over the first five races. So very good there. I stick with the young guns and go with Chase Elliott, number two. I think he's proven now, this being his second year, that you don't see that kind of sophomore slump that goes along with some other drivers. Brad Keselowski really impressed me this past week. They could have folded it up and went down and didn't, and hung in there. And he actually, man, I'll tell you what, the guy can wheel a car and can get the most out of a car. So I've got him third. My man, Mr. Rowdy, Rowdy Fan, Kyle Busch, number four. He's up there still. This could be, you know, the start of another championship year for him, especially with the momentum I think he got from that deal with Joey Logano. And if that momentum keeps going forward, I think you could see him doing well. And then the 14 of Clint Bowyer makes an appearance in my power rankings merely because
out of nowhere.
I'm glad to see him excited again. I think he's a good race car driver.
And you know what? To me, he's great for the sport, yeah, because he's a person that is, when you put a microphone in front of him, he's entertaining. And I think that's people, they flock to that type of personality.
He's
somebody
as
that can
close
be
as an old school racer than you
right
see these
but
days.
He has that aura about him, that you know, that comedic part, that whatever it is, but people like to be around him. They like to root for him and see good things happen to him, especially what he's been through the last 18 months.
Absolutely. All right, Jason Hildebrand over here scratching his arm like we've seen Clint Bowyer do before. All right, Jason Hildebrand, power ranking.
Yeah, you know, it was a matter of time before I see Kyle. Yeah. Larson.
Greatness jumped runs in the name, my friend.
Yeah, I'm butchering everybody's name here today. Jumped up to the front of my power rankings, number one. Number two, mainly because he got a win and he was fighting to the end hard last week, Martin Truex Jr. Really like Brad Keselowski. He's done an excellent job this year so far. Like Chase Elliott, like you said, no sophomore slump for him. Actually a lot better this year than he was his rookie year. And then fourth, and then Joey Logano in fifth.
So looks like we got Logano in there. And Logano didn't make it in yours, Scott. Tell us who did.
Well, thanks for stealing my thunder, but Kyle Larson is, again, the unanimous pick this week as the top. And there's really not much more you can add. I mean, he could have literally – this was, what, race number four?
Five.
He could have won all five. He was in position literally to win all five. At Daytona, they run out of gas, or he probably wins that. And then he finished second three straight weeks and then finished and then finally won a race. And you go back and look at the end of last year, it was top two, top three finishes the end of the year last year. So they've figured it out. They've got it going on. They've got good stuff with a great driver, and we're seeing the results week in and week out. Martin Truex in a similar situation. That momentum just keeps going. He has been about the only one the last month, at least the last two or three weeks, that's been able to run with Kyle Larson. He's been just as competitive, just as good. They made I don't know if they were better this week or not. They made a call at the end of the race that put themselves out there on older tires. And just one of those racing deals. You pick one, somebody else does something different, it could be a different result. I have him second. I love what Chase Elliott's doing now that he's got to take the next step and start finishing races. He's finding himself in the top two, top three, week in and week out. Now it's a matter of learning how to finish. Once they do, this is a multiple-time winner this year. I firmly believe they're going to not win just one race. They're going to win multiple races. They are, without a doubt, the best car in the Hendricks organization right now. Keselowski, what they were able to do this week was remarkable. That's just – we talked about it earlier. They are – they may be the best team in the sport, from driver to car to crew chief to what they're able to do. Just tremendous what they're doing. I did put Rowdy in number five. It was.
And I appreciate that.
Thanks, buddy. It was really a coin flip between him and Logano. I think you can flip a coin. I think those six drivers, and there's some other guys, Bowyer, Jamie McMurray, those guys are running pretty well. But to me, those six drivers that I mentioned, Larson, Truex, Elliott, Keselowski, Logano, and Kyle Busch, I think those – I truly believe it's those six – And then it's starting to be more and more like everybody else. It seems like those six cars are finding a way to run up front more than everybody else and pushing people for wins. I know Kurt Busch has a win. I know we've seen other – Kevin Harvick, they can't seem to get out of their own way right now. They're in a little bit of a slump. I think it's those six drivers, and then it's everybody else is trying to play catch-up. And we're going to see if those teams can make those changes and put themselves in position to start taking some wins away from these other drivers. But they are the best six drivers in the sport right now.
And going back to what we were talking about earlier in the show is that the first three drivers you mentioned, very young drivers in the sport. So it is kind of neat to see that. And then you think of some big names that are everybody else right now. One of those big names.
Who would have thought, after the first couple of races that Kevin Harvick wouldn't be in anybody's power ranking right now.
Oh, yeah.
But they can't, they're wrecking. They're struggling. And we knew that there would probably be some ebbs and flow as they've transitioned to Ford. Now, we've not seen that with Bowyer. We've actually seen him kind of uptick. But that Kevin Harvick team has struggled just a little bit here the last couple of weeks. Now, some of it could just be freak accidents, and we're looking again at 2 or 3 week stretches. Over 36 races, it really doesn't matter. Everybody's going to have 2 or 3 week stretches where they're not very good. But because it's early in the season and we're seeing what's going on, it's been a little bit of a struggle for Harvick and that group the last couple of weeks.
But him, like Jimmy Johnson, both of those drivers seem to have those kind of spells where they go through and they can't do anything right. And then they'll have a spell where it's 4 or 5 weeks where they're
up top. The advantage of the playoff format is the top 16 cars get in. So those last 4 to 6 cars that get in, if you can just get in, you got just about as good as you can win some races and get hot and win this thing. So it's just a matter of they've got plenty of time to figure it out. Harvick, Jimmy Johnson Jr., Kenseth, I think you need to throw his name in there. He seems like every time I watch a race the last couple of weeks, I see him spinning out or doing something. So, they've got some stuff they've got to get worked out. Denny Hamlin, who's had a fast race car for stretches, but they've got to be there at the end and make the right decisions. There's plenty of time to get that, but what we're starting to see now, and I think, is depth. We're starting to see now where Jimmy Johnson and these type of drivers can get it going, then you add that to those other six drivers, and you're talking now 8, 10, 12 guys capable of winning a championship. Who could have said that 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago?
Absolutely.
A tough decision I had on my power rankings this week, I moved Ryan Blaney out for really no obvious reason to think. I mean, he came away with a top 10 finish.
If you just watch, I challenge people, and that may not happen as much this week, but next time they get to a track where you can just put your foot on the pedal and go fast.
Oh, he'll let it rip.
Watch Blaney, especially on restarts. He is all over the place. It is wild to watch, and I wouldn't want to be behind him.
I can't wait to see him at Pocono.
Yeah. That'll be big there. But, the big difference between him and when Trevor Bayne drove that car was that Blaney seems to keep the fenders on it. You don't see him running into the wall where it seemed like.
And listen, he's another immensely talented kid that once he figures it out, you're talking about guys that are going to be leading the sport and are already we're already starting to see a little bit of that talent come to the top. Kyle Larson has probably already stuck his head all the way out and say, hey, boys, I'm here now and I'm here for a long time. I think Chase Elliott's coming. I think Blaney's coming. There's Eric Jones,
even Suarez.
Suarez. There's some very talented guys in very, very good equipment that are going to be around for a long time as long as they keep their eyes and ears and focus on the prize, and that's being a winner consistently. And those guys seem like they have their head on their shoulders.
And one of those drivers you just said is going to be my pick to win this week, and that would be Mr. Chase Elliott. I think now is the time to get it done. Qualifying is going to play a big role here in track position, up starting up front and staying up front. 24, Chase Elliott gets his first win this week. Jason Hildebrand.
I picked Kyle Larson to win last week. It wound up happening. I'm going to try to go 2 for 2 here. I'm taking the 88 Dale Earnhardt Jr. on a shave boycott until he gets a top 10 finish.
And it's getting nasty.
So maybe
it's going to be Duck Dynasty in here in a little while.
I'm just hoping for at least a top 10 finish so I can get rid of this. But I'm taking 88.
Scott Webb.
I know that he's your favorite. And we need M&M's to sponsor this show. But I'm going to take Kyle Busch. I think this is a track where he's got to be able to stay focused on not trying to get back at Joey Logano and go out there and try to win some races. But I think he's been the best Toyota in that garage and I don't know that you can say that overall. I think Truex has been the best overall. But I think this is a week where Rowdy finds a way to get it done and gets his first victory of the year.
For once in my life, I hope that you're right, being a Rowdy fan, and maybe that'll happen. All right.
It's a lot. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
Martinsville, the STP 500 will be on Sunday at 2 o'clock. You can catch that on Fox Sports 1, which you would think if they were going to put one on, you know, the regular Fox station, they would put Martinsville being a short track. But it's on Fox Sports 1 and on MRN, so you can hear our very own Alex Hayden on 101.3 The Buzz this Sunday. Guys, fastest hour in radio. It flies by. So much to talk about. Hard to get to. We appreciate everybody joining us today. For Scott Webb and Jason Hildebrand, I'm Jamie Kyle. We'll talk to you next week when we break down Martinsville.
This has been Racing Talk Radio. Join Jamie Kyle and Scott Webb every Wednesday, 5 p.m. right here on 101.3 The Buzz or on your TuneIn app. This has been a production of Whitfield Media Group.